Yesterday, congratulations to Elza Nayeri and Eric Klein from all of us here at FSRN. For archives of this or any other FSRN newscast or documentary, you can check out our website at www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org. You can also email us your comments or story ideas to comments@fsrn.org. From KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado.
And this is radio station WBAI New York. It's 7 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bomb for the best.
Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, along with a whole room packed full of people tonight. Let's see if we can get everybody in. We've got Jim over there.
Hello.
And Mike.
Yes.
And Redbird.
Good evening.
And Seraph, you're joining us as well.
Hi.
How you doing? Mojo, you're still here from California?
By your command.
Yeah. And still working for Battlestar Galactica. You've checked, right? They haven't...
They're still returning my calls, yes.
Okay, good. And we also have Arseny.
Hey.
And Walter.
Hi.
So many people. I don't know what the occasion is, but glad you all could make it. Bernie S. is not here this week. He still has the Hungarian flu. Somehow he gave it to me, even though I haven't talked to him except on the phone. I don't really have it, but I've got something. I think I have what Mike had last week. Maybe you're the one who gave it to
Maybe
me.
Maybe everyone's getting sick this week.
Yeah, it's part of the conspiracy. Okay, you know what? No. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about the conspiracies, but we are going to, you know, read some letters.
Because how much time are we going to spend?
We got some good ones.
How much time are we going to spend?
You got the memo from the Department of the... Well, never mind. You know how much we're supposed to spend on it.
No, I don't know. I didn't get the memo.
Yes, Jim.
Is there a conspiracy to deny me the memo?
Why don't we start with good news and go downhill for a change?
You have good news?
I actually have good news.
Okay.
There's good news from, of all people, the Federal Election Commission. They've ruled that weblogs and similar things on the internet are exempt from campaign spending. This has been a sore point for a number of years, and people on both the right and the left were fearful that the $2,000 limit would be applied to weblogs, assorted comments on the web, people putting up sites supporting a candidate or position. Mm-hmm. And quickly, $2,000 worth of work could be just one little page. Well, the Federal Election Commission decided that, no, this is free speech. Free speech triumphs on the net. It's rare that we can say that, but in this case, we can. So you can blog for whoever or against whoever you want, and you don't have to worry about running afoul of the feds.
Well, I guess that's good for now until they figure out a way to have us run afoul of them in the future. But interesting. There's a new board game out, the Patriot Act board game. It's true. It's a send-up of Monopoly. Players don't pass Go. They don't go directly to jail. They go to Guantanamo Bay. Yes, instead of losing cash for landing on certain squares, they lose civil liberties. And the Mr. Monopoly character at the center of the board is replaced by a scowling former Attorney General John Ashcroft.
We have to get one for Hope.
Definitely. Patriot Act, the home version, pokes fun at the historic abuse of governmental powers by the recently renewed anti-terrorism law. And while it may be fun, creator Michael Kabash, what a great name, a graphic artist and Arab civil rights advocate, is serious about how he feels the law has curtailed Americans' freedom. You know what? We should invite this guy to come.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
yeah.
This is from Hamilton, New Jersey, so maybe that's where he is. So maybe he's listening now. Come to our Hope Conference in July, and we'll give a talk about this, maybe demo it, maybe have a tournament. How about that, a Patriot Act board game tournament? Sounds like a lot of fun.
I like it more.
Where can you purchase one of these?
I don't know. Why don't you browse the story and you tell us if there's some sales information there. But, you know, maybe we can do some kind of, mass contest with this game.
If this game gets enough publicity, maybe he can be sued by the makers of Monopoly.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Okay, other things. You hear about this? Online amateurs have cracked Nazi codes. This actually happened a couple of weeks ago. Three German ciphers unsolved since World War II are finally being cracked, helped by thousands of home computers. We can still fight the Nazis.
It's about 60 years.
And that took a little while, but we did it. The codes resisted the best efforts of the celebrated Allied cryptographers based at Bletchley Park during the war. Now one has been solved by running code-breaking software on a grid of internet-linked home computers. The complex ciphers were encoded in 1942 by a new version of the German Enigma machine and led to regular hits on Allied vessels by German U-boats. Is there a reason why the Germans couldn't just tell us how to do it? I mean, kept the secret this way? Or can't they decode it either?
Maybe the only Enigma machines that solve this are the only codes were bombed, burned, destroyed towards the end of the war.
That's what they want you to believe. I'll bet they're still making coded messages with these things somewhere.
Those Nazis.
It's probably Nazi gold or sunken Nazi subs full of little aliens that we can...
It just goes to show you, though, that that if you have something that's unbreakable, if you think you have something that's unbreakable, in about 50 years or so, you might not anymore. So that's something to keep in mind for all you people basically encrypting things. Might not be as secure as you think.
Well, it's happened with a couple of algorithms so far.
Mm-hmm.
But real quick about this board game, you can get it online, and there's no URL here. However, I'm sure if you Google for it, you'll be able to find it. But only 2,000 copies have been downloaded since it debuted in 2004, which is kind of unfortunate.
Wait, 2004? Why are we just
checking
it now?
Wait a minute, I think we've seen this.
This is what it says in the article.
So why is it an article, then, if it came out in 2004?
Oh, I don't know. The article date is March 18th, so...
Yeah, but it's one of these instances where the media decides something's a story, and all of a sudden people talk about it like us, and it's actually 2 years old. But still, it's a good idea,
it's
and I'm glad
cool.
I'm hearing about it now. So, all right. Speaking about Germany, there's interesting, kind of amusing development involving some closed-circuit cameras and a German chancellor. Supposed to protect some of Germany's most famous antique treasures, but the other day, embarrassed officials admitted that a security camera on the roof of Berlin's Pergamon Museum had instead been filming the chancellor, Angela Merkel. The camera overlooks her private flat. Over the past 8 years, guards at the museum in Berlin's central Mitte district have been able to spy into Ms. Merkel's living room. The newspaper Bild am Sonntag reported the other day they could even zoom in on her sofa. Reporters from the paper tried it for themselves. They spotted her reclusive husband watching television. It was like a scene out of the Big Brother container. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. But I guess this just goes to show that surveillance affects everybody.
It seems to be happening a lot lately. We had a story a couple of months ago, I think it was, about the British doing... a similar thing with all of their closed circuit.
Yeah, spying on some poor woman in her apartment.
So keep your shades down.
Yeah, and you know, one day that's not even going to be enough because they'll be able to look through the windows.
It's already not enough. There's a suit against the NYPD, a helicopter with advanced infrared technology. Got a couple last summer on the roof of an apartment building. Mm-hmm. It was dark, it was late, but the helicopter noticed that what they were doing, and it was as good as normal lighting, what with the high-tech camera.
Didn't they notice the helicopter?
Well, yeah, but it was far away, and they didn't think anything of it.
Hmm. Here's a warning. Taxpayers not paying attention to the forms prepared for them by commercial tax preparers could find their personal financial information being sold more widely to data brokers and marketers. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, too, where someone's Social Security number was actually being used as part of the mailing label of, Merrill Lynch. This is slightly different. The IRS is proposing to alter some privacy protections that consumer groups say would allow tax preparers greater leeway to sell personal financial information from the documents or even copies of the tax return itself. I think it's outrageous that they are even allowed to do this at all, sell your tax return. The IRS has scheduled a hearing for April 4th on the proposal, part of a package of revisions the agency says are designed to safeguard information. One, for example, would require written taxpayer consent before a tax firm sends a return overseas for processing. Yes.
Wait, these are a package of reforms to safeguard information, and by safeguarding information, they mean sell it?
Yeah, well, no, this particular proposal they had to not to get approval before they sent overseas, because the people overseas are the threat, never the people here in this country. It's always if you send it to a foreign country, that's what you have to watch out for. So that's how they're getting away with saying that it's safeguarding information. But yeah, in actuality, they're tying another little thing to that.
Orwell would be so proud.
Well, I think he'd just be resigned that he was able to tell the future pretty well. Tax preparation firms can already sell, with written consent from the taxpayer, information from an individual's return to affiliated groups, such as any other part of a holding company affiliated with them. The IRS proposal will drop the affiliation requirement, enabling anyone to buy the information. Why would anybody agree to that? Why would anybody
agree?
Because
their tax advisor gives them a pile of forms and says, sign these.
Yeah, that's true. It says right here, taxpayers often hastily sign documents and tax forms prepared by commercial firms without reading them. Well, yeah, I hesitate to say it's your own fault, but you got to read these things before you sign them, and don't trust anybody.
Well, also, if some of these places charge by the hour, then you don't want to be really spending all that time sitting there reading forms, although I guess...
Can't you take them home and sign them there?
Well, depends. I don't know.
And then you have the case. This is hilarious. I don't know if you guys saw this. This was something that appeared on the Register. The heartland turned vicious this week when an Oklahoma town threatened to call in the FBI because its website was hacked by Linux maker CentOS. Problem is, CentOS didn't hack this particular site at all. The city's hosting provider had simply botched a web server. The tale kicked off when the city of Tuttle, their city manager Jerry Taylor, fired off an angry message to the CentOS staff. Taylor had popped onto the city's website and found the standard Apache server configuration boilerplate that appears with a new web server installation. Taylor seemed to confuse this with a potential hack attack on the bustling town's IT infrastructure. Who gave you permission to invade my website and block me and anyone else from accessing it? ? Taylor wrote to CentOS. Please remove your software immediately before I report it to government officials. ! I am the city manager of Tuttle, Oklahoma.
Wow.
A few people would initiate a tech support query like this, but these are dangerous times, and Taylor suspected the worst. Anyway, CentOS developer Johnny Hughes jumped on the case and tried to explain the situation to Taylor. I feel sorry for your city, he replied in an email. CentOS is an operating system. It is probably installed on the computer that runs your website. Please contact someone who does IT for you and show them the page so that they can configure your Apache web server correctly. That response did not go over so well. Get this website off my homepage, ! It is blocking access to my website. Five more with a dash for some reason. Again, CentOS tried to jump in and explain some of the technical details, but that response didn't go over so well. Unless the software is removed, I will file a complaint with the FBI. Went on for a long, long time. I am computer literate. I have 22 years in computer systems engineering and operation. Now, can you tell me how to remove your software that you acknowledge you provided free of charge? I consider this hacking. You can read the whole exchange at the following website. I didn't have time to make a tiny URL of this, but here it is. www.centos.org. That's centos.org/modules/news/article.php?story ID=127. And if someone makes a tiny URL of that, we'll read that in future weeks.
Should you follow this URL with 7 exclamation marks?
Didn't this guy, like, read the page that came up that said, like, it worked, this is a test page, you should ask your administrator to make it a real page?
Well, if anybody knows dealing with end users, they're pretty stupid.
Well, now we're going to get a lot of mail from end users, many of whom listen to our show, but I guess it'll drown out the conspiracy people. Walter.
But this guy wasn't an end user. He had 22 years of experience in
That's right.
engineering.
He'd take exception to that remark anyway. Jim?
You know, I'm convinced that it was a purposeful attack on Buttle, Oklahoma, but they mistyped it, and it was Tuttle.
Is there a Buttle, Oklahoma?
No, that's the idea behind the movie Brazil.
Oh.
I mean, I would have actually been pretty clueless if I was the person receiving this request. What are you talking about?
Well, he had a lot of fun with it, I'll say that. The responses just were priceless. But yeah, you know, the person who sent this in to us basically said some people just should not be using computers. And I agree. Not everybody should, just like not everybody should be driving, not everybody should be using computers, because there's just so much that you're going to waste people's time with asking ridiculous questions like where's the any key and stuff like that, which people still do.
I mean, yes, but also there's an obligation on the part of computer developers to make things usable by people without advanced degrees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Apache configuration isn't among those.
Our email address, oth@2600.com. Of course, we always enjoy reading your email. In fact, we're going to enjoy reading a little bit of it right now, and then we're going to get into a couple of rants and raves from people, and then we'll take some phone calls. But let's try and get through this quickly here. First, a very important thing. Dear Emmanuel, you seriously need to do a retraction from last week's show. The guy who did 9/11 in plain sight is not the Holocaust denier. And yes, you're absolutely right. I was wrong about that. I besmirched the guy's name. I confused. There are so many different films out there now that I confused one film with another, and we've all offered them all as premiums here at BAI. So, but that's no excuse. My apologies. I got it wrong. The Holocaust denier is Eric Hufschmidt. And his particular film, I believe, was called Painful Deceptions. The film that we were talking about last week was 9/11 in Plain Sight, plain spelled P-L-A-N-E. And that was made by Dave von Kleist, who is not, as far as I know, a Holocaust denier. And, of course, we were also talking about the film Loose Change, which was done by Dylan Avery, which I believe, Redbird, you have brought for me. You didn't bring it again. You see, folks, this is it. All right, you talk about conspiracies. I do want to see this film. I want to see it on my nice big TV screen, not on my computer. And
but your DVD player is broken.
No, I bought a new one.
Oh, you bought a
new actually
one.
Bought a new one. I it was Philips this time. Not to give any plugs or anything like that, but Philips actually makes a DVD player which is region free. Or you have to hit a few buttons and it becomes region free. It's pretty cool. But yeah, I went out and I did that in anticipation. And only to have my hopes dashed yet again.
Maybe I'll mail it to you.
Yeah, maybe. And it'll get lost in the mail. I see how
it's
this works.
In the mail, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So again, apologies for that. But my opinions still stand on various issues. Let's just quickly go through a couple pieces of mail. Dear Off the Hook, I'd love to hear an extended rebuttal of the 9/11 conspiracy theories from you and the others on the radio show. Okay, you know what? I'll tell you what. We'll do an extended rebuttal. Get us more airtime. All right, we'll be happy to. Get us more airtime, get us a two-hour show, and I'll tell you what, for the first year, we'll spend an hour of it just rebutting 9/11 conspiracy
this
theories.
This is not going to end well.
I resign.
Don't say that.
Oh, we'll have more space in the studio, too, then, because half the people will walk out. Yeah. But, all right, in many ways, you speak with much more authority than the Loose Change characters. It makes it sound so bad when you put it that way, calling them the Loose Change characters. The sloppy pulp conspiracy folks don't stand up well at all to well-mannered critique. Fox's flimsy moon landing hoax program being a chief example. I never saw that. I heard about it. They actually aired a program that sort of said that the moon landing was a hoax.
Don't see it. It's really bad.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it was based on Capricorn 1, which is about, I think, going to Mars, and that was a hoax. And they said, look at all the similarities. But Capricorn 1 came out in 1978. So maybe they were the ones looking at the moon landings and imitating them, and that's why it looks similar. Anyway, I was hoping also the 2600 crew could create separate feeds for off the hook and off the wall. It'd be so much more convenient. It's fine, Peter.
This you know, we have.
Have we done this?
We have.
Okay, because I always see emails about this. People always.
Wait, it's new.
Oh,
people
okay.
might not know about it, but we have.
I didn't know about it until just now. All right, good.
It's only for the high quality, the high fidelity. I'll let people judge the quality for themselves. But the high fidelity ones have their own feeds, and there's one for off the hook and one for off the wall.
You're off the hook. I often tune into your show on my way home from work because I turn on my radio, and it's usually on you don't have to explain why. You don't have to explain how it happened. It's not a crime we're accusing you of. Okay, you're listening to us. No further information is needed. Anyway, I enjoy you guys. You are bright, funny, reel off a lot of novel technical data that is fun to listen to. You know this is going to turn into something bad when you get this kind of compliment right away. But I happened to be tuned in the week before last when you fell into an unfortunate trap over the 9/11 questions. I've thought a lot about it and couldn't resist sending you a note, just like I couldn't resist reading it. Obviously, it's not your area of interest or expertise. And if only that was the qualification to not speak about something. And when the first call came in suggesting that the movie coming out about the alleged Let's Roll story is fiction, it seemed to press a button in you, and your normal, pleasant demeanor dissolved. I think I even said, this is pressing a button in me. So you don't get credit for finding that out. I said that. You seem to fall into the role of trying to discredit everyone who ever questioned the official story, which is an impossible task, even if you are right and prepared to argue every point.
No, that wasn't at all what we were saying.
Yeah, I mean, we question the official story. We really do. There's a lot. I mean, to this day, I have questions. How did they know everybody's name who were the hijackers? How do you know that? They didn't, you know, it's kind of unclear as to how exactly they figured all that out. It wasn't really explained very well. A lot has been covered up. There's no question about that. It's just my problem is when people have the answers and they know exactly what happened, why should we believe you? You know, when you don't even have the ability to cover anything up, you're just pointing out things that are crazy hypothetical situations, and passing them off as the gospel. Anyway, speaking in very general terms, the whole group started characterizing every person again. Generalization here, who puts forth one of the questions floating around as a conspiracy theorist and started ridiculing them all as if anyone who questions any part, okay, you know, it's just continuing along this vein, which is completely wrong. Painted everyone with a single brush, blah, blah, blah. Your skepticism about any theory is entirely appropriate, but it's useless to attempt to discredit everything all at once. Okay, the theme is just wrong here. The theme is wrong. You must know the Bush administration never played anything straight, so it's safe to assume that if you put yourself up as a defender of its positions, you're on shaky territory. Again, not defending Bush administration, defending what we see in front of us, what is based on witness documents, what is based on all sorts of other evidence. It would be appropriate to tell your callers, this is an area I really don't know about and don't really want to get into on the air. Well, if that's the case, if you want us to say that, then shouldn't the people who are calling in, unless these are experts in the field, they shouldn't be saying anything either. This seems like a way of just shutting everybody up, which might be convenient to some people, but I prefer to talk things out and air whatever needs to be aired and explain positions and things like that. You might even take a particular theory and analyze it piece by piece. That might really be helpful. I think we've done that. When you got so much mail, you hardened your position and became even more defensive and irate. Obviously, the whole subject irritates you. No, it's a little irritating because I get impatient. It's just like when I'm driving and people are going too slow in front of you and they're blocking you and you can't see past them. Yeah, same kind of annoyance.
In their SUVs.
Yeah. Except for the ones that fall into holes in Brooklyn. Anyway, this letter keeps going on for multiple pages. But basically, the crux of it is that we embarrassed ourselves by even mentioning it. And I don't agree with that. Emmanuel, my friend, it would probably be easier for you to back into your regular format and leave these theories to others to discuss.
They're not discussing them very well.
That's Dave from Hoboken. We can talk about all sorts of things that interest our listeners. Obviously, this interests our listeners, but it's not something that we want to spend a whole lot of time on, only because we have so many other things to discuss. But if someone puts forth a theory that we have a particular exception to, we'll explain why. And you're welcome to. There's nothing in here that explains anything that tells us this is the fact, other than many people say this, or you're obviously allied with these people.
I mean, the major thing that we were disputing was the silly stuff, like mm-hmm. people who said that the planes didn't bring down the towers and that, you know, planes didn't crash where they said they crashed and stuff. I mean, what's the point in that? There's much bigger issues here, like the fact that most people I talk to even today think that Iraq had something to do with 9/11 and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. it's just kind of, there's so many other aspects to explore that there's no point in sort of focusing on these silly things.
That's your real conspiracy right there, is being able to successfully blame an entity that had nothing to do with it and being able to basically just get the country into war mode very easily. That's a conspiracy. Did they have prior knowledge? I doubt it, but that's something that we really don't know. What we do know is that certain things happened that day and they resulted in other things happening, such as buildings collapsing and fires and people dying and not coming home again because they were in the planes that did not go someplace else, some mysterious place. Was it another planet? I don't know.
Hangars or like aircraft hangars and
Cleveland.
Yeah, some
Area sort. 51.
The Area 51 did come up in one of these, didn't it?
Did it?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
this person writes in, the real problem here is the fact that there are so many lies that are being spread. I believe that these are being spread in order to destroy any genuine debate about what happened on 9/11, and it's working.
Well, this is the meta conspiracy theory.
The medic conspiracy?
The conspiracy theories are themselves a conspiracy.
Oh, medic conspiracy.
Yeah.
I thought you meant medics were conspiring. Yeah.
No, that would be silly.
This destroys any genuine debate about what happened on 9/11. You can't question 9/11 without a group of fools talking about missiles hitting the World Trade Center towers. It's a shame that valid facts and questions are being ignored because of this crap. And this is exactly how I feel. This is exactly how I feel. It's not questioning. I mean, it is questioning the everything that happened, but it's also mocking the ones that are silly and easily disproven.
It's dwelling on things that are really insignificant in the scope of things.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Because, if you put explosives in the World Trade Center, you still have to get the explosives into the World Trade Center. Nobody saw that? And why not? Terrorists worldwide have concurred on this, that blowing up the building from the inside without using a plane is an acceptable form of terrorism. So that would have worked. That would have achieved their goals and everything. Everyone would have been happy with that, terrorist-wise.
Not merely terrorists worldwide, the Al-Qaeda network.
And they didn't need the planes. They could have saved all that trouble. So it makes no sense when you analyze it. Okay, two questions that have to be asked. Why would they not hit the White House? Well, there's an answer to that, actually. Supposedly the plane that hit the Pentagon was supposed to hit the White House. I don't know how they know this. That's something to question, too. Mojo?
No, I've heard about that as well. I think that plane was supposed to hit the Capitol, and they looked at the flight path of the plane.
Oh,
and
that was
see
the Capitol one.
They looked at the flight path of the plane. It was very obvious. It was heading for the Capitol, but it just missed. It didn't get low enough. And they seem very clear that the Pentagon was a last-minute dish effort to hit something.
The one in Pennsylvania
was going to hit the White House.
I was going to hit the White House. The one that actually landed safely in Cleveland and all the people
absolutely
went somewhere else. Okay. Why turn around and hit a side of the Pentagon that had just been rebuilt and was nearly empty? Why not strike? Okay, well, that would explain that if that were, in fact, true. And again, I say if that were, in fact, true. Okay, and one more letter on this subject. Love the show. My stack of zines is ever growing. Nice to hear some critical discussion of the 9/11 conspiracy theories on the air. I guess you don't really hear that all that much. Either hear the government view or you hear the conspiracy theories, but you don't hear a critique of the conspiracy theories, in this manner, I guess, where we're still questioning the government view. I was an early adopter of the very base theory that something serious was being covered up about the sequence of events that day, though I've been peeling off bits of my tinfoil hat ever since. But here's the one thing that got me thinking. Operation Northwoods. Hear about this? I would assume that at least one of your listeners has brought this up in a letter, but I have yet to notice its mention on the show. It was a plan drafted in 1963 by Kennedy's Joint Chiefs of Staff in connection with Operation Mongoose. The document is publicly available and details rather shocking ideas for framing Cuba as a terrorist state of sorts, such that an invasion/coup would be justified. Operation Northwoods would have involved friendly Cubans setting off bombs in Florida and Washington and the destruction of drone aircraft in Cuban airspace. In one instance, a civilian charter flight, preferably loaded with college students, and that's a quote, was to be evacuated at an auxiliary base while a drone was repainted to match it and blown up via remote. Another plan involved the use of planted media stories and funerals for mock victims. Now, say what you will about the crazy conspiracy theories floating around, but for a team of people to consider such a plan feasible in 1963 seems to imply that something similar and far more advanced could have occurred in 2001. I'm not one to believe our government shot missiles at itself and blew up fake planes with fake people to justify a shift in foreign policy and capital, but Operation Northwoods certainly makes one think.
But here's the thing, right? The Pentagon is in the business of constructing plans. They have a plan for what to do in case Canada invades. They have a plan to do for this, that, and the other. They spend billions of dollars and on plans that they don't plan to implement. The fact that one of the plans they came up with in 1963 bears some resemblance to what happened in 2001 is neither correlation, certainly not causation, and shockingly little correlation to any sort of causal anything.
Well, I think a very simple way of looking at this is, well, they could theorize all they want about this stuff, and it's not unreasonable to think that certain people in the government would have theorized about this stuff, mm-hmm. but actually pulling it off without anybody saying anything and actually planning it and going through with the whole thing, it just
why did Operation Northwoods never happen? Maybe because they realized they couldn't ever get away with it without somebody figuring it out or seeing some bit of evidence. And 9/11 is just so much more. Of course, we've advanced much more as sneaky people, I guess. But
well, just think about how many people would have to stay quiet about it, and that's where it starts to fall apart. So,
mm-hmm. And people can never stay quiet about anything. That's one thing I've noticed.
Watergate had about 12 people in on everything, and they started talking inside of a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Not much, but it kept going.
Everybody's got their price. All right, interesting. But keep the letters coming in, oth@2600.com. We do like to hear from you and hear all different opinions that are out there. We have more mail on other subjects as well, but I'd also like to hear a couple of stories. Now, I know, Sarah, if you have an interesting story about our good friends over at, was it T-Mobile?
T-Mobile.
Well, they put you through hell or something?
Yeah, they really did, and then I put them through hell.
So we don't have to take care of them? Because we will, if you want us to.
Oh, no, this is one of those things that just balanced out so perfectly in the end.
Really?
I was a T-Mobile customer. I had a cell phone through them. And after being with them a couple of years, the cell phone just died one day out of the blue. It started making loud clicking and popping noises, and I couldn't make a call. The classic cell phone death. So I gave them a call, and I told them what happened, calling from my landline. And I got a very nice fellow named Mark who said to me, oh, well, you know, your phone is still under warranty. So why don't you just, you know, arrange for a new phone to be sent to you for free. And I'll actually ship you the new phone before you even send yours back. And I'll send you a postage paid envelope to send yours back. What could be more convenient than that?
Hmm.
So that's what I did. I traded phones and I got a new phone. It didn't work great, but it got the job done. I was able to make calls again. And then I got my new bill for the next month with a couple of unusual things. First of all, an unreal amount of overage on minutes that I just couldn't understand at all. I really didn't make that many phone calls. And then also a charge of a couple of $100 for a new phone. Well, this is strange, I thought, and so I gave them a call. About the minutes, well, they said, you know, you made a whole lot of calls. I said, well, you know, send that to me and let me see this itemized because I can't believe I made that many calls. And as for the phone, I said, well, I thought it was under warranty, so it should be free. Why am I being charged for a new phone? And they said, well, it wasn't under warranty. And I said, well, I spoke to this fellow, and I've got his name if you'd like it. She said, well, we can't find him. We can't find anybody.
Uh-huh.
And she said, well, you're just going to have to pay for the new phone. And so I spent some time arguing with her about this, and she eventually said, well, here, I'll offer you a deal. And this is the point where they're saying to themselves, well, we're not going to get this person off of the phone. They're going to persist. And at some point, we're spending so much money on this minimum wage person to argue with them that we may as well just nip it in the bud and give them some kind of offer.
Mm-hmm.
And so she offered me two options. She said, well, you know, we can either take maybe a third of the price off of the phone or something like that, you know, as a courtesy. Never admit you're wrong. It's right. The first rule of being a successful American corporation.
Yeah, the courtesy thing.
Right. Or you can renew your T-Mobile contract for another year, and we'll give you the new phone for free, like we said we do in the first place.
My God. They have no shame. No shame at all, do they?
No. And I'm thinking to myself, why should I trust these people? They already lied to me about the warranty, and they're charging me some ridiculous overage. So, no thanks. I don't want to renew my contract for another year. In fact, I think I'll dump you as soon as possible. But I'd happily take this third off so that I can just pay my bill, be free of T-Mobile, and get out of this mess.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the deal. And the next month, my bill comes. And and the charge for the cell phone is completely gone. And I say, oh, this is fantastic. This is fantastic. And so then I give them a call and I say, hey, you know, it's time for me to cancel. And they say, all right, that'll be $265 for early termination. I say to them, I'm not under a contract. What do you mean early termination? And they said, oh, no, you renewed your contract just the other day.
Unbelievable.
So this is their revenge on me for complaining, is to renew my contract without even asking me whether I want to. Or actually asking me whether I want to, me saying no and them renewing it.
Wow. Don't they have to provide some sort of evidence that you actually renewed your contract, though?
Well, that's what I said. I said, where is this evidence?
Mm-hmm.
You're saying I had a conversation with somebody. Is that really all it would take? And she said, well, yeah, you know, that's all it would take. I said, it doesn't have to be something written, some kind of confirmation. Wouldn't you send something to me that I would have to sign? And she said, no, it's a verbal contract. Show me the verbs, I said.
Yeah.
Show me the verbs. Can you give me some verbs over the phone, some verbs on paper? Show me the verbs that I said that made this happen. Well, it's a verbal contract, sir. We don't record the conversations.
Verizon records the conversations.
Yeah, I've had many instances where the contracts are actually recorded in case they need to reference it.
Yeah, well, in this case, there wasn't anything to record, was there?
Okay, Walter?
Are you allowed to record the conversation?
Oh, in New York State, you can record any conversation you want as long as you know about it.
As long as one party knows about it.
It varies state by state, but New York is called a one-party state in that only one party has to know.
Yeah, Mojo?
Yeah. I don't know if it's any different with Verizon or just in California, but I recently changed my contract, and I was informed that even after you change it, you have 30 days to negate it, change back.
Oh, really?
So you might want to look into seeing it. I think that's pretty similar across the board, that if you sign a contract or get forget about the new phone, if you get a contract, you'll still have 2 weeks, 30 days to say, no, I've changed my mind, I don't want this.
And
that kind of protects you from the verbal agreement.
They probably don't tell you about it, though.
Is that a law?
I think so. Look into it.
Wow.
Okay.
Well, what eventually happened?
Well, I decided that I just wasn't going to give up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stayed on the phone with this woman and just repeatedly attempted to learn from her how this had happened and repeatedly insisted that I had never agreed to having my contract renewed. And she was just in disbelief and kept talking about how, as a courtesy, they would do this or that for me, give me a free month of service. I said, no. I said, I just want to cancel and get rid of this service, and I'm not going to pay an early termination fee because I never renewed my contract. And she was just having none of it. And I think I must have stayed on for a good 45 minutes with her before the idea really came to me that I should indicate to her just how preposterous in my situation it would be to renew my contract. Because, you see, I was a dying man.
What, you said this to them?
Why? Why, I said, why would I renew my contract if I only had a few weeks to live? Is this really the way that I'm going to spend my dying days, arguing on the phone with T-Mobile? My dying days.
And you were saying this in this nice, calm voice?
No, I was getting pretty worked up, actually.
Okay.
I can hardly reproduce right now the way I was speaking, but I would say that over the course of really about half an hour with this woman, telling her that I was dying, I really started to get upset, and my heart was beating faster, and I was sweating, and at one point I started crying.
Wow.
I was really, you know, I was, yeah, thank you.
Method actor there. You discovered a talent.
And she would keep going off the line and saying, well, let me consult with my supervisor. And she would come back, sorry, there's nothing that we can do. I'm dying!
Wow.
Yeah. And
now,
so
now the person,
yeah.
The person in the call center is probably saying, oh, God, we got another one who's making up that he's dying just to get out of the contract.
See, I don't know if this is a phenomenon or not. I'm predicting that now maybe it will start to be a phenomenon. But eventually she goes off, talks to her supervisor. I'm on hold for like 10 minutes and comes back. And finally, they give me the good news. Not because I'm dying. Not because they fooled me by renewing my contract without my approval. But as a courtesy. As a courtesy to me. They're going to backdate the contract to make it appear as if I had said yes to the renewal a year ago. Meaning that today would be the day that it would be up. And I could cancel and go to my deathbed in peace.
But wouldn't you have had two contracts at the same time then if you had done it that way?
Who knows?
Well, you could usually, they usually do allow you to extend the contract during a contract. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, but the contract doesn't take effect again until the first one stops.
No. It takes effect immediately. So if you were to agree during your contract, it would be extended to the point where...
All right, well, whatever. Right, the point is you got out of your contract somehow. Yeah. And
I should mention, too, that she said that she had to do it that way because if I was under this contract that had been put into the system, there literally was no way that the computer would let her terminate it without it charging me the fee.
Right, it's all about what the computer will let them do.
Yeah.
Unreal. Mojo.
This reminds me, I just got to tell this quick story, something that happened years ago when I lived in New York. This is before the Do Not Call list, of course, but every now and then the Daily News, New York Times, whoever would call you trying to get you to subscribe. This woman from the Daily News called. She sounded young. She was very, very sweet. We liked you to subscribe to the Daily News. I said, I'm not really interested. Well, you know, you get Sundays for free and home delivery. No, thanks. I'm not really interested. Well, if you order now, you'll get half price the first 6 months. And I didn't want to just tell her to go away and be cruel. And finally, I said, look, really, I get most of my news from television. I don't read the paper. Well, if you order now, we promise to throw in this and this week. And I said, look, I'm blind.
And
there's
that
a
work?
Pause. Sir, I'm so sorry. We apologize for calling. We'll take your name off the list. No one will ever call you again.
Wow. That's effective, I guess.
Time's on tape? No?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they'll come with a Braille edition, and then they're going to call you back. Mojo, did you have some kind of other rant that you wanted to express?
You were talking about your new DVD player before, and just made me start thinking. I've been reading a lot, I'm sure everyone here has been, about the new high-definition DVDs coming soon, and of course the format war between Blu-ray and HD DVD, and everyone's buckling down, getting ready for the big retail war between the new formats. And I just thought about this, like, you know what? I think they are really overestimating the public's desire for high-definition DVD. Because, look, the format DVD itself has been around for, like, 13, 14 years. And honestly, I think it's only been maybe the last 5 or 6 years it's gotten total widespread universal acceptance where everybody on the street's got a DVD player. And that transition in picture from VHS to DVD for everyone, it's astounding. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone walking down the street is astounded by the television picture now. So what's going to happen? They're going to walk into Best Buy, you know, in 6 months, and they're going to say, sir, really, you need to get this new high-definition DVD. Your picture will be 4 times better than a DVD. And they're going to say, well, my picture's pretty good right now. I think I'm pretty happy with it. Well, mm-hmm. if you get it now, you'll get all this. So the person finally agrees, all right, I'll spend $500 on a brand new high-definition DVD player. They're going to say, well, does that mean I have to buy all my movies again? Yeah, you have to buy all your movies again. Well, that's attractive. That's great. And, and by the way, there's two different formats. So if you buy the Blu-ray or buy the HD DVD, half the movies on the shelf aren't going to work anyway. So that's going to really make people excited about it. And then ultimately, before they walk out of the store, they're going to say, and of course, sir, you do have a high-definition television capable of displaying that picture. No, if that's another $2,000 at least.
Yeah.
So I really wonder, who are all these people going to be engaged in this format war? Because it's not like you just buy a $100 DVD player and you get a great picture.
They're video files and audio files too. We'll want something better than CDs. I'm quite happy. I was happy with phonograph records, to be honest. But but you know, I'm pleased as punch with CDs. I don't feel the need to get something even more amazing than that, or even more amazing than DVDs.
Well, you're right. That's a perfect analogy. The Super Audio CD came, and I guess it's still out there, but nobody cares.
Super Audio CD. I missed that one.
That is like a 96-bit recording system, and that only requires like a new CD player. Uh-huh. This requires a high-definition television and rebuying every movie you've already got.
Look, it's gotten as good as I think it should get. Work on improving our lives now. work on reality. Make that look better.
The thing is, this is always said when new technology is introduced, this kind of stuff, and you know, it's as good as it's going to get. And
come on, I mean, well, like crackling records and skipping on vinyl, obviously that was a problem.
Well,
VHS degradation, that's a problem too.
they're different aspects of the same sort of thing, and it's just the beginning of, you know, a progression towards better quality media, and this is the beginning. It's not going to be widespread anytime soon, but...
You know, but what's not improving in quality is the content, and this is really Hollywood's major problem. And their own studies show this, that the reason people don't go to movies is because they're bad, but they're...
How do they know they're bad if they don't go to them?
You know, the people know.
You just know.
We need to tap into that sixth sense that they have as to what's bad. But speaking of senses, how about, you know, doing some maybe smelling now with something that you can smell things in the movie? They've been playing with Smellorama now for how many years?
That's why I don't go to the movies.
Any movie in New York City is Smellorama, believe me.
Or, you know, touch, or I don't know. They can be doing all sorts of other interesting things as well. But I think the picture's gotten about as good as it can get, and the sound's gotten about as good as it can get. Let's move on and do something a little bit more creative now. Okay, one more letter. Let's take some phone calls at 212-209-2900. In reply to our discussion last week about cell phones and movie theaters, my wife is on a transplant list, and because of this, I need to be able to receive calls even if I'm seeing a movie. I do silence it so it wouldn't ring, but it would look like a flashlight, as you described. Sometimes a cell phone is very important. You know, I think this guy found the one reason that you would want to have a cell phone on in a movie theater. But I'll tell you what, the people that were sitting next to me in a movie theater talking on their cell phones, they're not on a transplant list. Maybe they are now after the incident in the parking lot afterwards, but no. No, most people are being inconsiderate. But yeah, there are some exceptions, so I could see how having a blanket jamming device would be a bad thing. But there's got to be some middle ground here, Jim.
What about the old days? If you look at movies from the 30s and 40s, the doctor gives the number of the movie theater to his nurse so he can be called. You know, they call the damn theater first.
Wait, I just got a solution. Give the person a beeper, a special transplant-less beeper. Beepers work in more places than cell phones.
An even better idea. That's why doctors and drug dealers still have beepers.
Yeah. Or implant something under their skin that'll work, you know?
Well, I have to say, when you go to a movie, is the most annoying thing in there really the cell phones? I find the people a lot more annoying.
Well,
and
the
screaming
people are the ones
yelling.
Using the cell phones.
Well, I think there's more of a social aspect to this than a technical one.
Well, obviously, people are behaving like savages. There's no question about that.
That's why I think the greatest movie-going scene in all the movies I've seen is Charlton Heston in The Omega Man. He's in the movie theater alone. Everybody else is dead. He can enjoy the movie.
All right, we don't have to go that extreme. Okay, actually, I do have to address a couple of issues that some people have written in about, and we're going to take phone calls, 212-209-2900. Dear Off the Hook, I've already registered for Hope. I'd like to book one of the special Hope rooms as soon as possible. Every time I call the reservation hotline at the hotel, they tell me to call back in June. I was able to get a room 2 years ago for Fifth Hope in March of that year. And all sorts of other good reasons why. Signed, Mike. Mike, we've gotten this same complaint from a number of people, and I looked into it today, and you're not going to like this. I don't like this. But the hotel has a computer system that they're in the process of changing in the next month, and they say, this is true, they say that they cannot generate a reservation number now for something taking place in July, even though we have the special rate, even though you can indeed register. You just can't get a confirmation number. But if anybody tells you you can make the reservation, let us know who they are, because literally that's something that they should not be doing.
Tell them the hackers will generate a confirmation number.
Yeah, I mean, I found this. I'm astounded by this, but this is Hotel Pennsylvania, this is how they
can
work.
Can we just give the hotel like a pile of numbers and they just give one to each person?
You will, if you register with the Hope Conference, you will get a room, one of the refurbished ones with the internet jacks that actually work. So you just won't get the confirmation number until I think the end of April or something crazy like that. But again, if anybody says you can't register for the conference, register for the special room rate at the conference, let us know, because they're not supposed to be doing that. All right. Also, this other listener wrote in, guys, I made a pledge to your show over a month ago and still have not received my shirt or TV Be Gone. I probably would have donated the money anyway without getting something, because I enjoy your show, but if you're going to advertise the items you're giving away, it would be nice to receive them. Signed, Andrew. Andrew, you're absolutely right about that. What we're doing is trying to get the names from the radio station, and I believe tonight we'll get the last of them. Then we just have to confirm the people who pay by credit card. Those will go right out, and those of you who haven't yet paid, obviously we can't send those out. But hopefully everybody has paid, and then
it's no fun.
Yeah, well, we have to, you know, at some point, make sure that the people who pledge actually are the ones who have paid as well. Okay, I think that takes care of all our business. Again, our email address, oth@2600.com. Our snail mail address, in case you don't have this computer thing handy, is Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 120 Wall Street.
10th floor.
New York, New York.
10005.
How often do you get snail letters?
We do, actually.
Really?
Yeah, we get a few a week. We'd like to get more because they're interesting. There's always something interesting in them. People can send
snails.
Yeah, I mean, you can't send a physical document or a Metro card, wherever people like to send us, in email. You have to attach it inside an envelope.
Okay. Walter was right on target today. He was right on target with the 10th floor. I think it's time to start assigning.
Let's not devote too much attention to the fact that he got it right 1 week. Let's see how he does over a couple of weeks, and yeah, then maybe we can expand. All right, let's take a phone call. And good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening.
How you doing?
I'm enjoying your...
Thank you. Are you still there?
I am, yes.
Okay.
You know, I was just listening to the scenario that you expressed about the phone situation.
Are you standing near a monitor by any chance?
I am.
Okay, move away from the monitor, please.
Okay. All right. As far as I can go with it.
Okay, good.
Is it still okay? You know, that is a conspiracy between the corporate group that represents that phone company.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they've orchestrated a whole dialogue for the employees. They took a lot of time in order to get a person to acknowledge something that they didn't authorize. So if you made the original transaction through a credit card, you can write your credit card representative and indicate that you did not make or authorize that transaction. And they could just reverse
well,
it.
Well,
you wouldn't have had to go through all that.
The contract itself, there's no specific charge for the contract. The only charge would be if you broke the contract. So, yeah, I guess in that regard. But I don't think, was your bill being paid by credit card?
Because if they debited you,
I wrote a check every month.
Yeah, it was by check, so it wasn't even a credit card.
I see.
Yeah.
It's best to do it by credit card. You can easily reverse it just by indicating that you did not make nor did you authorize the transaction.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think, you know, what Seraph did, it takes a lot of energy, but sometimes we have to buckle down and do that.
It's sad.
It's
really
sad. It's sad that you have to
but
resort to such measures.
That is an example of conspiracy by a corporation, by the corporate groups.
Yeah.
And they do it all the time, and for this individual to have to waste hours, you know, time is money.
And if you tolerate it, if you take it, you're actually a part of the conspiracy.
Listen, and have a good night. I
Thanks.
Enjoy your program.
Thanks for calling. And actually, I had a similar, not as bad as you, but I've been getting call. I don't get very many calls from telemarketers because I think word spreads as to what I tell them. But when this one particular one kept calling literally 8:30 in the morning every single day, I can't be bothered by phones because I don't, you know, if I'm sleeping, I just unplug the phone and it doesn't bother me. But it annoyed me that somebody had the audacity to call me every morning at 8:30. It was from one of those 888 numbers. It was obviously a telemarketer because it wasn't a regular area code plus phone number. And finally, I picked up and found out who it was. And it was my bank. Now, of course, I have a pre-existing agreement with my bank, so they get to call me even though I'm on a do not call list. But I told them, look, don't call me anymore. I don't want to hear anything that you have to say unless it's an emergency of some sort. And even if it's an emergency, I doubt I can help you. So they said, okay, we're going to remove you. And the guy spent the next 5 minutes listing all the things he was removing me from. We're going to remove you from the better credit offer, from the home mortgage offer. We're going to, you know, all these the trip insurance offers. I said, fine, remove me. It's going to take 30 days to take effect. How in God's name does it take 30 days for them to stop calling me? I don't understand this, but I have to accept that because there's no way around it. Either that or find another bank, which probably does the same thing. All right, let's take another phone call. 212-209-2900. Good evening, you're on the air. Well, that was your chance, and you blew it. Good evening, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Pretty well. I just wanted to talk about the cell phones a little bit.
Go ahead.
Mainly, I'm wondering why they keep adding all these features like MP3 players and cameras and organizers and whatnot without improving the audio fidelity.
Thank you. Yes.
Because improving the audio fidelity costs them more money, and they get to charge you for these other services such as downloading MP3s and sending pictures and videos.
Do you know how hard it has gotten just to get a phone that doesn't do all this other nonsense, taking pictures and playing music and God knows what else phones do these days? It's so annoying.
I just want a simple telephone.
I want a phone. That's all I want. If I want an MP3 player, I'll get that and choose the best one. There's
exactly.
so many little icons and buttons and features, and if one of them breaks, God help you with all the rest.
Well, I don't want a crappy camera. I don't want a crappy MP3 player. I want a good telephone.
Right.
Your best bet is to get a GSM carrier where you can swap out the SIM card, and buy your own GSM phone from, you know, an independent carrier.
If anyone has...
In regards to the contract dispute, wouldn't that maybe fall under anti-slamming laws in your state?
I think it should.
I remember in Florida a few years back, there was a big problem with telecom companies signing people up for different long-distance plans.
But you see, the thing is, those are landline companies. The regulatory agencies get really weird when it comes to wireless. That turns into something federal. The FCC gets involved, and we're not really sure who we're supposed to complain to. I would imagine the FCC, Common Carrier Bureau, or somebody like that, Wireless Carrier Bureau, if there's such a thing, they would take an interest in this. So if somebody does have something similar happen, contact
them.
And
it's also my understanding that when it comes to contract law, if it ever does go to court, a verbal contract is worth bupkis.
Yeah, it's probably true.
A signature on something from somebody who's over the age of majority, there is no contract.
Mm-hmm. And how many of us sign something when we have a contract with a wireless carrier?
Exactly.
All right, interesting points. Thanks,
thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
Good night.
Good night.
I have to say, though, the regulations for landline phones are similarly confusing. I revisited the land of intrastate interlata the other day, which I think is the stupidest thing ever.
Uh-huh.
Costs more to call Buffalo than anywhere else in the country.
Does it still?
It still does for certain kinds of phones.
Unbelievable. All right. Let's go up here. And good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi. What's up?
Hey. You guys were talking earlier about the encryption that was broken over there from the Nazis and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, there is an actual method called the one-time pad by Gilbert Vernum. And basically, if you have, say, 10 characters, you also have a 10-character pad. So therefore, when the pad is not known, it could be anything that those 10 characters could represent. So theoretically, it's never breakable because you could make whatever you wanted out of it. So.
Right. If it's completely random, it's
exactly.
Theoretically
yes.
Unbreakable. However, it's relatively inefficient. You have double the size of the data that you're encrypting. And then you have to store them separately and keep them secure as well. So you run into a lot of other issues with those.
Absolutely. One trick, though, that people may not have thought of is real quick. I'll make this quick. You encode with one key, you send it over, he puts his key on, so there's two keys, he sends it back, you take yours off, and then you bounce it over and he takes his off, and that way you don't have to agree on a key, thus not having the duplicates, but it does take more legwork getting it back and forth across the line.
Okay.
Well, anyway.
Thanks.
That's all I had. Thanks.
Go ahead. Yes. Okay. Just all this waving around.
The answer is no, that won't work, but...
Why?
It won't.
And why won't it work? Okay, you're just going to say no and look smug.
You can't share encrypted information unless you are also
sharing a key.
Okay.
It's just the way it works.
Okay.
If I'm speaking French and you don't know French, you can't understand me.
Well, if you're animated and waving your arms around, you might be saying, get away from me, or something like that. All right, let's move on. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes. What's on your mind? Speak up, please.
Yeah, yeah. My name is Tony.
Hi. You have something to say, Tony?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, go ahead.
I want to ask, what is a big screen and how expensive is Philips?
Okay. I don't know how to take that. We're going to have to think about that one, and we'll get back to you.
Good evening. I've got a big Philips.
You're on the air. Oh, boy. Look at that. He scared away the other ones. Good evening. You're on the air.
You're on the air. Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Turn on your radio, please.
Okay. I'm going to turn it on right now. Okay.
All right.
I have a problem with a cell phone.
Okay.
I call Jamaica quite frequently, and I was charged an enormous amount of money. Okay. I accept that. Roaming charge, whatever they say. So I went ahead and I used the calling card that you can buy from any store. And I follow their directions where you would dial an access number and then you put in your PIN code and then you dial your number and you would get to speak with the person in Jamaica. However, what happened was I wound up getting a bill for several thousand dollars.
Yeesh.
Yes, even though I used the card. And this is a T-Mobile, by the way.
Oh, boy. What did they bill you for exactly?
They said that when I dialed the phone using the card,
uh-huh,
I must have pressed something twice or whatever. But I didn't do that. So I went ahead again, and I tried to, with different cards, following the precise...
Well, sir, we're almost out of time, but were you in a foreign country when you did this?
No, I was in a foreign country.
You were here, and they charged you that amount, Redbird.
The only mistake I could think of here is that a lot of the times calling cards like that have access numbers for both the country that, for example, the United States and Jamaica. So you could have possibly called the access number in Jamaica and have been using long distance via your wireless carrier. Do you know what I mean?
Even though I'm using...
What was the number that you dialed in this country? What was the access number for the calling card in this country? Was it a 1-800 number or was it a number overseas? A lot of time cards can be...
It's a 1-800 number.
Okay, then...
We need some more information. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I wish you'd called earlier, but try calling again next week. We can try to analyze this. But there's scams all over the place, and many of them are perpetuated by the phone companies. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back again next week with another exciting edition of Off the Hook. Until then, stay alert, write to us, let us know if anything weird is going on with technology. And our email address is oth@2600.com. Of course, we still want you to get involved in the HOPE conference. We're organizing for the speakers, volunteers, things like that. You can email speakers@2600.com if you're interested in giving a talk or a presentation. volunteers@2600.com if you want to take part in actual organization. Again, the conference taking place July 21, 22, 23 at the Hotel Pennsylvania, New York City. www.hope.net is our email address. I'm sorry, it's our website. Yes. Have a good night.
On Saturday, April 1st at 12 noon, join the Black Men's Movement Unity March at Rockaway and Livonia Avenues in Brooklyn. The Black Men's Movement is calling for 500 brothers in black to take back the hood, to put the guns down, and to rename Linden Park in honor of the late Ababadika Sonny Carson. Speakers include Councilman Al Van, ex-political prisoner Shasha Brown, Stan Kennard, Ali Lamont, Coltrane Chimurenga, and Councilman Charles Barron. That's Saturday, April 1st, 12 noon at Rockaway and Livonia Avenues in Brooklyn. For more information, call 718-398-1766. That's 718-398-1766. Take back the hood. Need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer.